I'd say sensitivity to him. I mean, mm-hmm. the biggest inspiration for this whole drama was a letter. Jeff Pope, who's written the brilliant scripts for this, he came across a letter, and that their eldest son, Nicholas, tragically died in a car accident when he was 10 years old whilst Ronnie was in hiding in Rio. And that this happened in Australia. And when we eventually filmed in Australia, we were invited around Charmian's house, and she actually gave me this letter to read. And it was one of the most heartfelt, heartbreaking sort of pieces of writing I think I've ever read. And it was along the lines of, you know, he'll always be with me. I'll always remember his happy, shiny face and see him with his Lego. And, you know, that sort of illustrates a very sensitive and sort of caring husband and father. And, you know, don't get me wrong, he was that. He was a wonderful provider and he was a family man. But, you know, I guess this really is a story about someone who was offered the equivalent of $2.5 million in cash in today's money. And that this is the million-dollar question. It's like, why did he choose to participate in it in the first place? And at the time, he says, you know, I did it for you, Sharm. I did it for you, you know, for you, so you could have all the things that I never had, you know. But in hindsight, Charmian will turn around now and say that he did it for himself and his ego. So, again, it comes back to that thing of him constantly testing your opinion of him.
Talking to Daniel Mays here on 5 Live. Mrs. Big starts tonight on ITV1. We'll talk more, Daniel, if we can, in a few moments' time. But at 2:31, let's get the latest BBC 5 Live news now. Here's Rachel Hodges.
On digital radio, digital TV, mobile and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Prime Minister has said he will keep his manifesto pledge not to build a third runway at Heathrow during this Parliament. Boris Johnson, London's mayor, has challenged him to rule out expansion of the airport, describing the idea as mad. Speaking in the Commons a day after reshuffling his cabinet, Mr Cameron said he wanted every government department to now concentrate on the economy. But the Labour leader, Ed Miliband, accused ministers of sticking with an economic approach which had failed spectacularly. Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, has carried out his biggest ministerial reshuffle since taking office in 2007. As part of the changes, his deputy, Nicola Sturgeon, leaves her role as Health Secretary to become Infrastructure and Capital Spending Secretary, which includes responsibility for the independence referendum, which is planned for autumn 2014. Martin McGuinness has described a third night of violence in North Belfast as absolutely deplorable. Loyalists pelted police with stones, bottles and fireworks yesterday, but the trouble was not on the scale of previous evenings. And the Office of Fair Trading is to examine the price of fuel across the UK. The organisation says it wants to find out why petrol prices have risen by 38% in the last 5 years and diesel has gone up by 43%. That's the news. Sport now with Will.
Rachel, thank you. Let's head back to Trent Bridge, where they're half an hour into the decisive one-day international. Not what England had in mind at all, Pat Murphy.
No, they've got work to do. Morkel and Steyn bowling particularly well, although it was Peterson, the slow left-arm spinner, opening surprising, so that Morkel got the early breakthrough. Bell, more or less, missing a straight one, out for 10. LBW wasted the referral. He was plumb out. Papara then out second ball, caught behind off Steyn. So that meant that England lost two wickets in four balls. Bairstow's there on four, Cook 14. The 30 for two in the eighth over.
And England, of course, at lead 2-1 in the series. It's live on 5 Live Sports Extra. England's women beat Pakistan by 81 runs in the second 2020 match at Loughborough. Great Britain's Sarah Storey won her third of a possible four London 2012 Paralympic gold medals with victory in the women's C5 time trial today. It's her 10th Paralympic medal overall. Tomorrow's road race is her fourth and final race of the Games, and a chance to win the 11th gold, which would put her level with Baroness Tanny Gray-Thompson.
I can't believe that. You know, it's just incredible to think that I've managed to secure 10 and 5 in each sport. So now I'm delighted, and I don't think that'll sink in really until I get home.
And a bit more to come, hopefully.
We'll see how the road race goes.
Britain's Mark Colborne won his third medal of the Games with silver in the C1 time trial. David Weir is through to the final of the men's T54 800 metres. In the pool, there'll be a sibling rivalry in the final of the SM8 200 metres individual medley after Ollie and Sam Hind qualified for tonight's medal race. Ollie, the younger brother, won his heat, Sam finishing second. Great Britain are playing the United States in their opening match of the wheelchair rugby, the latest from the basketball arena in Phillip Stud.
Great start for Great Britain. They took the first quarter, Will, by 13. 13-
11 against the defending Paralympic champions, but a slightly scrappy start to the second quarter from a British point of view, and the Americans, the hot favourites coming into this opening match of the wheelchair rugby here at London 2012, have now moved 20-18 ahead, 4 minutes and 44 seconds left of the second quarter.
Thanks, Phil. Let's go over to Eton Manor, where Britain's Gordon Reid is playing for a place in the singles final. How's he getting on, Gordon Farker?
He's putting up a good fight in the second set here. He lost the first 6-3 to Michael Scheffers of the Netherlands. Reid's got all the shots and great determination evidence in his fight back from love 40 down in the third game of the second set to break Scheffers. Reid leads here 3-2 in the second.
Gordon, Britain's sailors are guaranteed at least a silver and a bronze medal as they head into the final day of the sailing regatta tomorrow. As it stands then, China leading the way with 54 golds, GB still in second place in the table, 24 golds, Russia just the one behind though on 23. Away from the games, on loan West Ham striker Andy Carroll has been ruled out for up to 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. He was injured on his West Ham debut at the weekend. England fullback Ryan Bertrand has signed a 5-year contract at Chelsea, a new deal for him at Stamford Bridge. At Manchester City striker Mario Balotelli could miss Saturday's Premier League match against Stoke after having laser eye surgery in Italy today. The Italian has been suffering from conjunctivitis associated with wearing contact lenses. Swansea defender Jazz Richards has been called into the Wales squad for their opening World Cup qualifiers against Belgium and Serbia. And tributes have been paid to the racing journalist, broadcaster, ex-jockey and fundraiser Lord John Oakesy, who's died after a long illness aged 83. Champion jumps trainer Paul Nichols described Oakesy, founder of the Injured Jockeys Fund charity, as a legend and a true gentleman of the turf.
Thanks very much, Will. Thank you. You are listening to Five Live, talking to the actor Daniel Mays this afternoon, who's appearing in the first of a 5-part series called Mrs. Biggs. He plays the great train robber Ronnie Biggs. Going to be talking to him in just a couple of moments' time. But we've been hearing a lot in the past 24 hours about David Cameron's cabinet reshuffle and also, of course, the comings and the goings between ministerial departments at Westminster. But now, actually, Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, has decided to carry out his biggest ministerial reshuffle since taking office in 2007. Now, our Scotland reporter, James Shaw, can tell us more. James, who's going where?
Yes, it came a bit out of the blue, Sam. We weren't really expecting this until about an hour or so before it happened. But the most important move is Nicola Sturgeon, who is the Deputy First Minister, Alex Salmond's deputy. She stays Deputy First Minister, but she loses her health portfolio and takes up a new one, which is about infrastructure and capital investment, the kind of stuff we were talking about yesterday, in fact. But probably more important than that, she also takes up responsibility for the independence referendum. And I think what you can see there is the Scottish government pointing itself in a new direction, pointing itself towards the independence referendum. She is probably Alex Salmond's most trusted lieutenant, and he is putting his best people on this case.
Now, we also heard, of course, from Alex Salmond yesterday about his government's plans for a referendum on Scottish independence. What are the implications of this for negotiations between the Scottish and UK governments, then?
Yes, well, I mean, as I say, Nicola Sturgeon now is on the case, one of the kind of big hitters in the Scottish political scene. Also interesting that Bruce Crawford, another minister who was involved in those negotiations we're talking about, he's actually stepping down from government. No explanation for that, no big explanation, except we're told there have been some bereavements in his family. But you think, well, this is the guy who's been doing the negotiations and now he may be stepping down. So how is that going to work out? Who's going to take over that job? Presumably Nicola Sturgeon. At this point, Sam, I probably shouldn't do it. I'm going to do something a little bit dangerous by my standards anyway. And make a prediction, the most likely outcome as to what the question is going to be after those negotiations are finished. Based on this reshuffle and other information that we have, I would say the most likely outcome now is that it could well be just a simple yes-no question on the referendum ballot, but the age of people who are allowed to vote, and this is one of the things the SNP wants, could be including people who are 16 and 17, as well as the normal threshold, which is 18, of course. That's my prediction. You can come back to me and tell me that I was wrong.
The Mystic Meg of Five Live. Thank you so much. James Shaw reporting there. We'll keep you up to date, of course, on this story as it develops. Right, let's look at the times. 20 to 3. I'm Sam Walker in for Richard Bacon this week. Thank you for listening. I'm talking to Daniel Mays this afternoon, a fine actor who, as you know, may have seen in many of his roles. Nanny McPhee in The Big Bang, one of my favourites, Daniel, while having small children. But you are appearing tonight, of course. ITV 1 at 9 o'clock is the start of your new series where you play Ronnie Biggs. And, you know, you've been... you've been quite strident in saying, you know, this is Charmian's story, this is Mrs. Big's story. It is called Mrs. Biggs, but you, of course, play Ronnie, and you have talked affectionately about him. He's a complex character, but, you know, there's been quite a lot of reaction from Five Live listeners. Ed from Twickenham has said, stop putting the great train robbers on a pedestal. They should not be glorified. Why not make a documentary about the poor man who died after being assaulted during the robbery? He's the forgotten victim, says one text. And IJW says, I'm not happy about a drama being shown concerning Ronnie Biggs. One of the robbers killed one of the guards. I mean, what's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, that's obviously a regrettable incident off the back of the robbery. But, I mean, like I said before, I mean, it's a drama primarily about their relationship, and it's told through her eyes, and the actual robbery only takes a small proportion of screen time. And so, I mean, I understand people's grievances, and it's the argument, does it glamorise it? But, you know, within that, it's about whether or not this is a story which merits being told. And because it's told from her point of view, you know, I mean, the bottom line is that Charmian has hated this stigma which's been attached around her neck, that she's only just been known as the great train robber's wife. And so this is her, you know, chance to set the record straight. And I think, you know, hers is a story of a woman who has battled through adversity. And the fact of the matter is, she had no knowledge about Ronnie's involvement in the robbery. He actually told her that he was out tree felling. And so, you know, it does merit being told. And I think she's come through it with her head held high, and she's, you know, grown into a sort of formidable woman, really, and she's been able to empower herself. And so, you know, I think that, at the end of the day, merits being told.
I mean, you've talked about your involvement with Charmian. You work very closely with her, and she let you look through her archives. I mean, really personal letters and memorabilia that she had of her husband, her ex-husband, and also her children. But she, of course, was also there on set with you for a lot of the time. What was it like as an actor playing out these very emotional scenes from a woman's life when that real woman is stood 10 feet away from you?
Yeah, that was bizarre. I mean, there was just thinking of a scene where the two of them in prison, where he near enough knows he's going to be going down for 30 years, and there'd be no parole with that in those days. And I mean, it was obviously a very sort of intense moment on set between myself and Sheridan Smith, who plays Charmian. And I sort of looked up, and she'd crept on set without me knowing, and she was just sitting in the corner watching the monitor with the cans on. And I thought it was just such a extraordinary moment, because, you know, this is her whole life being played out, and she's having to sort of go back and revisit these memories. And so, like I said earlier, there was a huge amount of weight of responsibility, and you know, it was about talking to her as much as we could and absorbing all of the sort of material and trying to give it a level of nuance and integrity, really.
And what did she give you her honest, you know, approval or disapproval of your rendition of Ronnie? What did she say?
Well, she was actually struck at how much physically I resembled him, which, you know, I mean, I've got sort of light brown eyes, and he had sort of piercing blue eyes. That was the first thing that she really noticed about him on the train. So I was having to sort of put contacts in, day out, in sort of 4 months of filming. But yeah, she was quite taken aback at how I'd sort of studied the mannerisms and tried to bring the love of her life, you know, to life as such. So it was, I mean, I think she's really pleased with the end result. I mean, I just hopefully want people to I mean, I understand people's take on him, and I understand that, you know, he is a controversial figure. But, you know, really, I mean, I'd like people to come at this with a blank canvas and allow the story to be told.
Now, we've talked about the fact that it's Charmian's story. Charmian, of course, is played by Sheridan Smith. What an actress. What an actress.
Yeah, no, she opens in Hedda Gabler tonight, actually. So best of luck with that, Sheridan. I think she's incredibly busy at the moment. But listen, I think she's just delivered a complete tour de force. And, I mean, I would really put her down as one of the most talented actors I've worked with. She's incredibly hardworking and committed. And I mean, obviously, like, a lot of people might know her through the comedy work that she's done on Two Pints of Lager and all of that. But I think here she's really able to stretch her wings and come out of her comfort zone. And, yeah, she's a kind of complete actress, I would say.
I want to ask you, actually, how you got into acting. You're not from an acting family at all. How did you get the bug?
No, I'm not. I mean, I... I was always jumping around doing impressions of Prince Charles and Frank Bruno to my mum and dad's friends. So, I mean, I'm one of four boys, so I'm third in the pecking order. So I just think it was maybe that sort of child that was desperately wanting to be noticed or heard in some capacity. So, I mean, I was lucky that I always knew that I wanted to perform. That was always... I went to stage school and there I sort of did improvisation classes, and then I kind of got really interested in, you know, De Niro was a massive inspiration for me, and, you know, his films with Scorsese were massive inspirations. So, and it's from there I sort of trained at audition for RADA, and it's all sort of started from there.
You see, it's interesting you mentioned Scorsese and you mentioned De Niro, because you've played a lot of villains. You've played a lot of bad guys. Have you ever wondered, you know, got worried about being typecast at all? I'm not including Nanny McPhee in The Big Bang in that, just for the record, Danny.
Well, he was a rotter. No, it's difficult, isn't it? You kind of leave drama school and you've got to keep your head above water. And I guess to a certain extent, all actors are pigeonholed, I guess. You know, Benedict Cumberbatch plays a lot of posh parts. But it's about, you know, I guess the more work you do and the more, you know, strong foundation you build up, it's about then trying to be very imaginative and creative in the choices that come your way. So, I mean, I have played a lot of characters that are on the wrong side of the tracks, obviously Ronnie Biggs being one, but, I mean, it's always about trying to investigate these people as truthfully as possible, really, and play them, you know, in a three-dimensional way. So it's about really investigating their background and their influences and trying, you know, at the end of the day, good acting is about truth. And I think... I enjoy trying to sort of humanise dark people and people that have lost their way. I think, you know, great drama is great conflict. And I guess, you know, I've played a lot of people that sort of, I guess I've played a lot of wounded characters. I kind of enjoy that. But I mean, look, I don't mind doing comedy and I just want to be employed for the end of the day.
You're in a new movie. Neil Jordan's directed this. Now, he's known for some great crime thrillers like Mona Lisa and The Crying Game, but also I'm thinking of Interview with a Vampire, which he directed as well. This is kind of a mix of the two, isn't it, really? Byzantium.
It is. It's his new movie called Byzantium, which was the screenplay was by Moira Buffini. It's based on a vampire story, which was a stage play. And it's basically, it's a kind of old-fashioned but also contemporary tale about a mother and daughter who are both vampires, and they're played by Gemma Arterton and the brilliant Saoirse Ronan. And, just to get the opportunity to work with great filmmakers like Neil Jordan was a huge honour for me. But it was from the producers of Made in Dagenham. So I'd worked with that producer before, Stephen Woolley. So, you know, they're great people to work with. But he offered me the part and then he was like, Danny, I really want you to do it, but you've just got to be, I need you to put on weight. So it was my it was my De Niro raging bull moment. So I was like, I'm naturally like 12 stone, but I actually, you know, it was awful. I got over 14 stone. I put on nearly 2.5 stone.
So you sat around and ate cake and it was awful.
Yeah, I mean, I was on a holiday in Cornwall, so I just got the cream teas in as soon as I'd got the gig. But yeah, I won't be doing that again. It was really difficult trying to lose it. I had to lose it, actually, for Ronnie Biggs. So I was down the gym.
You play a cop, of course, in Byzantium as well. I'm thinking of the last cop that I can think of you played in Ashes to Ashes. He was a piece of work.
Oh, he was, yeah. I mean, lots of people talk about Jim Keats in Ashes. I have to put it down as the most enjoyable part I think I've played to date, because it was just wonderful to play a nemesis opposite, Phil Glenister, who's Gene Hunt. So, and my agent phoned me and she said, Danny, how do you feel about auditioning for Ashes to play the devil? And I was like, that's just bizarre, because, I was a huge fan of Life on Mars. And it was just a brilliant character, because you didn't actually know... You know, on the surface of things, he was like this discipline and complaints policeman, and he was a bit of a pen pusher. And then gradually, as the series unfolded, there was this sort of malevolent side to him, and the sort of mask was revealed in the last step. But I had such a ball playing that part. I loved it, yeah.
Now, I know you've got another Brit movie coming out, Welcome to the Punch, and you're working with a couple of people you've worked with before on that, aren't you? I mean, Andrea Riseborough, she was in Made in Dagenham with you.
Yes, Andrea is the female lead in Welcome to the Punch. It's a movie written and directed by a great new filmmaker called Iran Creevy. Now, I did his first feature called Shifty, which was a micro budget, which was basically shot for 100 grand in 3 weeks. A scheme that Film London do. And, you know, that was such a huge shot in the dark, but a great success. You know, it got lots of award nominations. And, you know, off the back of that, Rani wrote Welcome to the Punch. And that, you know, the budget was 5 million. And it's a contemporary cops and robbers piece with James McAvoy and Mark Strong are the leads, along with a great cast. You've got Johnny Harris in there from This Is England, Andrea, Peter Mullins in it. And, so, yeah, it's a real slick, epic film along the lines of Heat and Infernal Affairs. So that I've only saw that last week, but it's, yeah, I'm chuffed with it. It's a great piece of work.
It's another great British film. You're not gonna go off to Hollywood, are you? Or are you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, you never know what's around the corner. So it's such an unpredictable business, really, in a way. So, I mean, I'm really happy with the sort of scripts that are coming in this country. So, and they always seem to sort of test me as an actor. So, you know, I mean, I did Tintin a few years back with, I'm going to, you know, name drop.
Go on, do it.
Spielberg directed that.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, him. And then, but that was a great experience. So, I mean, I guess just watch this space and, you know, see what happens.
It's been great to speak to you. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, Sam. Pleasure.
As Daniel Mays. And if you would like to see Mrs. Biggs, it's tonight on ITV1, first of five parts, at 9 o'clock.